Speak, O Lord, your servants heareth. Amen. Please be seated. As I mentioned, the subject of this morning's sermon is the story of Hagar and Sarah, especially those two, but also their respective sons and the one man in the story, Abraham. But every now and then we get into this situation where there's something in the other text that is not the basis for the sermon that is so hard to understand or so outlandish that if I don't address it, a thought crime may be created. So I'm sure that if you read the gospel lesson this morning, as we read it together, you would be kind of puzzled and surprised and a bit put off. And if you're not, you should be. Because these are what biblical scholars call the hard sayings of Jesus. Jesus has some hard sayings. And I just want to touch very briefly on these hard sayings before getting into the main subject. This text was written in a time, remember, Jesus dies around 33. His resurrection is he's about the age of 33. The church starts to grow, and the Jewish followers of Jesus are meeting on a regular basis in the synagogue, as they always had, because they're Jews. And in the synagogue, there's a growing controversy about whether Jesus is truly sent from God or whether he was just another revolutionary pretender who got his comeuppance by Rome. This conflict became so serious by the end of the first century that finally, particularly in Matthew's community, the Jews who are following Jesus are thrown out of the synagogue. This is one of the most important events that happen in the development of Judaism and Christianity, end up going in two different ways. There was a time when they were together, and the harsh language of this passage is reflective of how awful it was for a child who said, "I'm following Jesus. I'm a Jew. I've been bar mitzvahed, but I'm following Jesus." And that child is thrown out of the family. And this goes on and on and on for a good number of years. And as a matter of fact, for the first 300 years, there is so much movement back and forth between the synagogue and the church that people didn't even know which they belonged to. They felt at home if there was an event, a funeral or a wedding or a funeral wedding in the synagogue, well, all the Christians would be there because they were all Jews. And when Jews would move around the Mediterranean region, if there wasn't a synagogue right there, it's quite likely they'd go to a church because the church was a bunch of Jews. So you can see that at this time, this break is really quite severe. And it angers people and hurts people. Families are upended by it, destroyed by it. And that is that's the context behind this passage. The most important thing to know in this passage is just one phrase that's repeated over and over again. Do not be afraid. No matter what happens to you, no matter what comes, God is your protector. Do not be afraid. Even if you must die, do not be afraid. So now, our real sermon. I love this story. I love the first half of the book. I love the whole book of Genesis, actually. But this section where Abraham is called out of his village, his home in Iraq or northern Iraq, with his new wife and their servants, and they are following God, who gives them a promise that if you follow me, I will take you to a land that will be your own, and I will make your descendants like the stars in the sky, like the sands of the sea. There will be so many of your descendants that they'll be uncountable, but they'll all be yours. You can imagine what that must feel like, to know that your life is, in a sense, going to go on and on and on and on, and they'll continue to refer back to you. They'll talk about you. So this is what Abraham and Sarah are promised. Well, they get to the promised land, and time goes on. Sarah is a beautiful woman. And as they're traveling throughout the Near East, Abraham and Sarah have a pact that she will always say, "I am the sister of Abraham," because the fear is that a king would steal her for his own harem. But as a sister, she was somewhat more protected. So because of her beauty, they had to come up with this ruse. Well, I'm sure she's still beautiful in Abraham's eyes, but she's 90 years old. And Abraham, he's 100. I love this story because the people in it are real, especially Sarah. She's not a stick figure, a cookie cutter. She's not carved out of cardboard. She's a real person. And in this story, you get the sense of Sarah's growing frustration and worry and fear that promise was just an empty promise. And so Sarah is going to take the matter into her own hands. And she is going to make sure that promise is carried out, even though they have no offspring. How can she do it? She has slaves. One slave she has is Hagar. Hagar is from Egypt. Now, there's a tradition about Egyptian women that they're very experienced. And so Hagar figures, well, he's 100 years old. He's going to need all the help he can get. And so, I'm sorry. So Sarah says, "You know what? I've been reading in the 20th century ethics books, and I hear there's something called surrogate motherhood. So I want to make Hagar a surrogate mother, and so there can be some offspring." And so she, in a sense, forget God's promise. She'll make sure the promise is carried out herself. And so she gives Hagar to Abraham, and in fact, it works, and they have a child. Or at least Hagar gets pregnant. Now comes the problem. Hagar is of low status because why? She's a slave. She's an Egyptian slave. But now she's pregnant with the child of the master. And as the story is written, we're not there, so we don't know all what's going on. But Sarah is now furious, and she says to Abraham, "That woman is going to be the death of me. She's lording it over. I can't even walk into the tent without seeing her with that big belly, and she lords it over me. She could have a baby and I could not. She makes me feel like dirt. Get rid of her. This is your fault, Abraham." She's really angry. Every time she sees Hagar, she's reminded of all of those decades when she could not bear a child. And it hurts. It hurts her terribly. Well, Abraham doesn't quite know what to do. An angel comes to Abraham and says, "Do what she says." And here we have recorded for the first time in history couples therapy. Do what she says. And so he does. He casts out Hagar. Hagar runs away with the little boy, now born, the little boy. And she's afraid she's going to die. Well, an angel suddenly appears to Hagar and says, and the angel says, "Go back to your mistress, Sarah. I am going to make this boy like that boy. Your son, your child, is going to be the father of many, many people, will be the father of great nations." So she goes back. Isaac is born. And the day that Isaac is weaned, they have a big celebration. And everybody's having a good time, especially who? The two little boys. Hagar's son and Sarah's son. And the two of these little boys, they don't know about promises. They don't know about God. They don't know about conflict between the moms. They just know they're buddies. They're half-brothers, and they're having a great time. And when you read the text, it says that Sarah looked out, and she saw them laughing She saw them playing, and she was enraged, because it was immediately clear who was the eldest child. Not her son. The slave girl's son is going to be the elder child. And he will, according to the custom, he will take all of the inheritance. Or, if they're really fair, they'll split it. Half will go to Isaac, and half will go to Ishmael. Sarah says, not on your life will that happen. He is not going to share in the legacy of this family. And so she gets thrown out again. Now Sarah is so angry, she demands that Abraham, who is now loves this little boy, Abraham loves this little boy, Ishmael. He's part of the family. And it's his own son. But he understands Sarah's position, and he casts Hagar and the little boy out. And they go out to the wilderness, where she prepares to die. But she cannot stand the thought of holding her son and letting him die in her arms. She can't imagine watching him die. And so she puts him under a bush and turns her head. And she doesn't want to hear him cry, but he cries. And because he cries, suddenly an angel appears to Sarah, to Hagar. And Hagar complains, my mistress has, master, thrown me out, and now my son is going to die, and I can't watch. And the angel says to Hagar, God has seen you. God sees you. Now that becomes the name that she gives God. Hagar actually gives God his name. One of his names. Hagar gives God the name, the one who sees. You saw me, I see you seeing me, is what the text is saying. But more than that, the angel says that God heard the boy. That God heard the cry of this innocent child. And God's heart is deeply moved. And so now we have God who sees and God who hears. This seeing, hearing God is so focused now on those who are cast out, the ones who have no status, the ones who, if they die in the wilderness, no one will know, and if they know, no one will care. And that's who God comes to in the form of the angel. It's an important phrase that's repeated. God was with the boy. God heard the boy. God heard the voice of him crying in the wilderness. And God says, do not be afraid. In a nutshell, this story tells us a couple things. It tells us many things, but one of the things it tells us is that this is an origin story. It's the story of the founding of Israel. Founding of Israel is who? It's Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac. And then from Isaac, Jacob, and then Joseph. And this becomes the line of succession for the Israelite people later to become the Jewish people. And God calls them into a relationship called the covenant. You are my people, and I will be your God. I will guide you and protect you and lead you, and no one else will have the status that you have. And so it's very natural then for Israelites and Jews then to say that all other people are not important in the universe. All other people don't have God as their God. Only we, with this covenant, this agreement that God will be our people, God will be our God, and we will be his people. And this got passed on to the Christians, who adopted all this whole story. And so the Christians said, everybody else in the world, other than Christians, or later, other than Jews and Christians, are going to hell. And only we are acceptable to God. And that's not what the text says. It's very clear that the covenant is for the descendants of Isaac, the descendants of Abraham. It's very clear. But all of the other peoples in the world are part of the promise that God gives when he comes to Hagar. That not just the Jewish children, Israelite children, or the Ishmaelite children, but all children around the world belong to God. And that wherever they are, God hears them cry. And whatever pain that they may be suffering, God knows and hears. And what does God do? God sends an angel. Or angels. We talked last week about what angels are, and the final thing we said about angels is, who are angels? We are. You are the angels of God. Whenever God hears the cry of an innocent child that is suffering, God sends his angels. Do we go? Do we take on the responsibility of the angels of God and reach out to the one who is suffering? God gives us God's eyes. God gives us God's ears so that we may hear the suffering of the world, so that we may see the suffering of children, so that we may act as angels and actually do something for them. Whatever tribe anyone belongs to, they have a promise that God hears them. And God promises to us that no matter how dangerous it may be, or no matter how we may be rejected and opposed and make everybody mad, we will be God's angels on behalf of those who are forgotten, who are suffering. And Jesus says to us, if we take that responsibility up, Jesus says to us, even if you are killed doing this, do not be afraid. Thanks be to God.